Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Two Republican lawmakers want to make Florida's polluters responsible for warning the public about toxic spills.
Because that's the goal, and I know that's the governor's goal, is to ensure that there's transparency and that citizens have the opportunity to protect themselves if they need to.
Also this week, Governor Rick Scott's latest budget proposal was inspired by the Orlando mass shooting.
A terrorist inspired by ISIS killed 49 innocent people. I am personally going to do everything I can to make sure that we all do everything we can to fight acts of terror like this in Florida.
We'll also talk about when and how Florida's medical marijuana amendment may be implemented, and a move to give Floridians more control over the circumstances surrounding their own deaths. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Well, first off, Happy New Year. We start off our first Capitol Report installment of 2017 with a story about a push to make life a little happier, or at least a little safer, for people in Florida who might be impacted by dangerous chemicals and other harmful substances that suddenly wind up where they shouldn't be. Alarmed by a massive spill from a fertilizer plant and sewage dumps into Tampa Bay, Florida lawmakers want to force polluters to warn the public about toxic releases. And as Jim Ash reports, the same business interests that killed an emergency rule are watching closely.
This summer, more than 215 million gallons of wastewater poured into the Floridan aquifer when a sinkhole opened up at the Mosaic Fertilizer Plant in Polk County. Also this summer, Hurricane Hermine flushed tens of millions of gallons of raw and partially treated sewage into Tampa Bay. Governor Rick Scott swung into action with an emergency rule forcing polluters to notify the public within 24 hours of a major spill. But last week, an administrative law judge sided with business groups and said Scott had no legal authority to act. Republican Representative Kathleen Peters of South Pasadena says she's working on legislation to fix that.
Because that's the goal, and I know that's the governor's goal, is to ensure that there's transparency and that citizens have the opportunity to protect themselves if they need to.
The heavy hitters of the Tallahassee Lobby Corps, Associated Industries of Florida, the National Federation of Independent Business, and the Florida Retail Federation fought to kill the emergency rule. They argued it would force convenience store owners to call a press conference every time a customer overfilled a gas tank. Peters says she's still working on thresholds for triggering public notice and what the warning should say, but she thinks boil water notices are a good model.
It's amazing how when a water main breaks, the media is reporting on that so quickly, and it seems to be quite seamless. And so can't we get the same kind of system on a spill if it's a health issue that we can get this word out very quickly?
NFIB Florida Executive Director Bill Hurley says small business owners had a lot of concerns about the emergency rule. A diesel mechanic, Hurley says, isn't always going to be the best interpreter of toxic thresholds.
And for that matter, knowing how to reach out to local media sources to satisfy the notice requirements, that left an awful lot that could slip between the cracks.
Florida Retail Federation spokesman James Miller agrees. He says business owners would much rather notify regulators and leave the public relations to someone else.
We feel that DEP they're the experts in this kind of situation. And they're the ones that know the appropriate media to call. They're the ones that have the best examples of way of getting this information out to the locals in an area.
However, Miller and Hurley insist they're not opposed to the legislation. Hurley says he's eager to help sponsors craft the language. And that's what worries Clean Water Network activist Linda Young. She's afraid business interests will water down the legislation until it's practically meaningless. A may instead of a shall could make all the difference in the world, Young says.
If this legislation is going to be meaningful, if it's going to be protective, and if it's going to accomplish what the public would like to see have in place, there's going to have to be very, very, very close scrutiny of every word.
Governor Rick Scott can be expected to do just that with every bill that crosses his desk. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Last year's Orlando attack, the worst mass shooting in modern American history, is prompting Governor Rick Scott to put millions of dollars in his proposed budget toward counterterrorism and intelligence efforts in Florida. And as Sasha Cordner reports, law enforcement agencies around the state are praising Scott's decision.
The actions taken by various law enforcement agencies responding to the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando led Governor Scott last month to give pay raises to 4,000 law enforcement officers.
A few weeks ago, I announced that I would propose a 5% pay raise for all sworn state law enforcement officers in my 2017 and 2018 recommended budget as a thank you for their service and dedication to public safety.
Building on that announcement, Scott now wants to put more funding toward the state's counterterrorism operations. During the attack that left 49 people dead and more than 50 injured, the shooter Omar Mateen had pledged allegiance to ISIS. And even years before the massacre, he had been investigated by the FBI for links to terrorism.
My daughter's about the same age as a lot of the individuals that died that night. It was an attack on our gay community, our Hispanic community, but it really is an attack on all of us. Because, you know, a terrorist attack can happen anywhere. So it's important to me, and I know it's important to everybody in law enforcement, that we have the resources to do everything we can to prevent another terrorist attack. That's why in this year's budget, I'm going to propose $5.8 million. So we have 46 agents. They're focused on counterterrorism and intelligence. They'll be around the state.
The money for the agents is through the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and its commissioner, Rick Swearingen, says he's grateful.
I'd just like to say thank you to the governor. These positions are critical to keeping Florida safe. If you listen to Director Comey of the FBI, they do a great job, but Director Comey has said the federal government cannot do this on their own, so it has to be a collaborative effort.
And Swearingen says each agent will have a role to play.
So the positions we're seeking, 38 of those will be special agent positions. One will be a special agent supervisor, and the other 8 will be crime intelligence analyst positions. Those positions will allow me to assign an agent to every joint terrorism task force here in the state. Miami has 9 joint terrorism task forces alone. The FBI has 9 in Miami alone. 2 in some of the other regions, but it'll give me an ability to put an agent on every JTTF in the state. The others will it'll be a mixed role of working, gathering intelligence on some of these folks and working operational cases once they're identified.
So why are these positions so critical?
We do have resources currently. However, we don't have enough. I typically have to pull resources now from some other, whether they're working economic crime or drugs or whatever. I typically have to pull folks away from another investigative mission. This will allow me to have the ability to have those folks solely focused on terrorism.
And Orange County Sheriff Jerry Demings, who is also the head of the Florida Sheriff's Association, says he too is on board with the governor's plan to give FDLE the analytical resources to help combat terrorism.
As a profession, we're going to have to enhance our capabilities to gather criminal intelligence information about individuals involved in subversive organizations who intend to invoke violence on Floridians. Our state is growing, our tourism is vibrant, and will create additional challenges for us as a state moving forward. And I believe, especially with the incidents from Orlando, we are going to have to continue being vigilant regarding our counterterrorism efforts.
The Florida Police Chiefs Association and the Florida League of Cities also applauded the governor's decision. So did House Democratic Leader Janet Cruz, who called it, quote, a critical investment. Still, she says she hopes it will be part of a larger conversation to pass meaningful reforms to keep weapons out of the hands of dangerous criminals and the mentally ill who seek to commit violence against Floridians. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Well, back a few months, the Florida Supreme Court ruled that a new death penalty law was unconstitutional, and today the chairman of the Senate Criminal Justice Committee proposed requiring unanimous jury recommendations before defendants could be sentenced to death. The proposal, filed by Orlando Democratic Senator Randolph Bracey, was an opening move as lawmakers prepare to grapple with the death penalty sentencing system during the legislative session that starts March 7th. The U.S. Supreme Court last January ruled that the sentencing system was unconstitutional because it gave too much power to judges instead of juries in determining whether inmates should be put to death. The legislature quickly passed a law to try to address that ruling, and as part of the law, the legislature required at least 10 to 12 jurors to recommend the death penalty. That was a departure from a longstanding law that required a simple majority. But the Florida Supreme Court in October ruled that jury recommendations must be unanimous for the death penalty to be imposed. Bracey's bill would match that requirement. Senators last year backed requiring unanimous jury recommendations, but ran into opposition in the House and from prosecutors. Still to come on Capitol Report, lawmakers want to reduce the population of prisoners in Florida and save money, but it's been a long, slow process through the legislature.
They are all interested in making sure that people have a second opportunity, so long as we're talking about nonviolent individuals.
Florida's medical marijuana amendment is now in effect, but the big question remains, now what?
Merely saying, go and promulgate regulations is like someone saying, go build a car.
Is fantasy sports gambling? Florida lawmakers are looking to answer that question in the coming legislative session.
It doesn't have the hard edges of gambling, but it allows play sometimes for as much as, you know, a couple dollars to enter into such a contest.
And it can be very tough to talk about death, but one Florida lawmaker wants to make those conversations easier so patients get the end-of-life care they choose.
If we had had the conversation earlier, I think my grandparents would have made some different choices than maybe our family made at that time.
Advocates of criminal justice reform in Florida expect the state legislature to address some of their top priorities in the upcoming legislative session. But big structural changes could result in significant impacts on the state's prison population and rate of recidivism that will require more money, political will, and possibly years of effort. We get that story from Sarah Mueller.
Here's an irony. Crime in Florida is at a 45-year low, but the state's prison population has grown from less than 27,000 inmates in 1978 to around 100,000 people today. Despite what some criminal justice reform advocates say has been incremental progress, the government expects to have about the same amount of inmates as it has now in 6 years. Reducing the inmate population while maintaining public safety is a complicated task where many groups and advocates have differing and opposite views. Lawmakers are the piñatas in the middle, trying to cut costs, keep the public safe, and address societal problems like addiction and mental illness. Some people, like Raymer McGuire with the ACLU of Florida, say they'll push lawmakers to reduce the state's prison population by doing away with some of the state's hundreds of mandatory minimum laws. Pulling a gun, firing it, and actually shooting someone during a crime can land the offender with a 10-year-to-life prison sentence.
The mandatory minimums often result in unfair sentencing, where judges have no discretion, no safety valve to look at the specific case and to judge whether or not the mandatory minimum is appropriate.
But Panama City State Attorney Glenn Hess says prosecutors support mandated long prison sentences to keep violent criminals off the street and protect the public.
The legislature several years back saw that we had an increase in crime. They built more prisons and they put mandatory prison sentences in effect. By taking those people who were prone to commit serious crimes and placing them in the prison system for a long period of time, it takes them off the street for the benefit of our communities.
Lobbyist Barney Bishop heads the Smart Justice Alliance, a conservative group which advocates for criminal justice reform. He says the group has had past successes in the General Assembly, getting an inmate reentry program for nonviolent drug offenders and expanding the number of civil tickets juveniles can get before going into the criminal justice system. Bishop says he supports legislation this session that would have police officers issue more juvenile civil tickets across the state and using more diversion programs across the state. He's also pushing a proposal to allow adults who commit a misdemeanor to also be eligible for a civil citation. Similar legislation died in the House last year. There's also differing opinions on whether people with addiction and mental health should be given more treatment instead of prison, or whether they're not doing enough to stay clean. McGuire of the ACLU wants the state to end the war on marijuana, but Bishop says more research on medical cannabis needs to be done to ensure safety.
There's going to be crime related to medical marijuana. It's not the harmless drug that everybody says it is.
Legislators are also expected to make juvenile justice changes. Public defender Stacey Mills says Florida needs to stop allowing prosecutors to file adult charges on defendants under age 18 without a judge's approval. But Hess says he believes youth of today are much more violent than when he first started as a prosecutor in 1979.
All you need to do is go on Facebook and look at what these kids are posting. Pictures with guns, pictures with drug money, pictures with drugs. The intensity has increased tremendously.
Despite those differences, advocates are optimistic lawmakers will make progress. How much progress and who will be the winners and losers remain to be seen. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
While state officials debate the best regulatory framework for medical marijuana in Florida, a more practical challenge may be on the horizon. Nick Evans reports the current list of doctors may not be enough to meet the demand of an expanding pool of patients.
Over the next few months, lawmakers, health officials, and, of course, potential investors will jockey for position in a changing medical marijuana landscape. They'll debate policy questions like local control, the definition of debilitating conditions, and what qualifications are necessary for caregivers. But another group is looking for changes where the rubber meets the road, the doctor's office.
As far as the three-month relationship requirement, I have a real problem with this. Just yesterday, I had a patient come in who is terminal, might have, if she's lucky, 2 months to live. And I have to look her in the face and say, I have something that I think can help you, but I can't give it to you.
Mark Hashem, a Central Florida anesthesiologist, is speaking to a panel of state senators. Instead of waiting to establish a 90-day relationship with a patient as current regulations require, Hashem wants to work more like a specialist, making treatment recommendations in concert with a primary care doctor.
So my proposal would be to allow the qualified physicians to order this for the qualified patients based on receiving medical information from their practitioners on their diagnosis.
The newest figures from the Department of Health put the pool of patients at slightly more than 1,700. But attorney Colin Rupnarine says that number could explode as patients eligible under Amendment 2 join the market.
I've seen some very large numbers, anywhere from, it's going to jump from, you know, you're looking at maybe 600,000. You're looking at, you know, well over a million patients. I don't think anyone's really quantified that. But it's going to be tremendous. There's going to be a massive uptake. So can the number of doctors who are currently registered handle it? Probably not.
Right now, there are only 387 qualified physicians. That number will continue to grow, and Rupnarine believes health officials and lawmakers will take steps to deal with a potential bottleneck. But he says complying with the amendment is a tall order.
Merely saying go and promulgate regulations is like someone saying go build a car.
As officials search for a policy prescription, the market is already moving. In Tallahassee, Joe Dorn has opened up a small medical marijuana practice. He started out as medical director for Sotera Therapeutics, one of the state's seven dispensing organizations, but he left to start working directly with patients.
We had patients calling daily, numerous patients looking for physicians. And so I stepped back and said, well, maybe what I'm supposed to be doing is actually doing direct patient care again, which is I've been doing for years. And so I decided to open my own practice.
Doran says medical marijuana reform in Florida has found its impetus in consumers rather than physicians, and he believes the state could have millions of eligible patients when everything is said and done. If Doran's right, the demand could encourage more doctors to follow his lead and jump into patient-facing practice. The question will be if they can keep pace. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
A Republican representative has filed one of the first gambling bills of the session. But Regan McCarthy reports this one defines what's not gaming rather than what is.
Most people think of fantasy sports as a simple office betting pool or friendly wager between buddies. That's how now Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz described it last year as he spoke before the House Business and Professions Committee as a state representative.
Many are familiar with fantasy sports and contests because they may participate in an office pool or a church pool or friends from college or high school, in my case, that I play with.
And Gaetz says in those cases, the focus is on fun, not money.
It doesn't have the hard edges of gambling, but it allows play sometimes for as much as, you know, a couple dollars to enter into such a contest.
But while that might be how many people play, new online fantasy sports are creating the opportunity for higher stakes games.
This is what it looks like when real people...
Get there! Oh!
Win $1 million playing fantasy football.
Companies like DraftKings and FanDuel offer daily and weekly fantasy games that offer larger prizes and can require a larger buy-in for participants. That's raised concerns for some who would classify the contests as gambling. But Sanford Republican Representative Jason Brodeur says that's simply not the case.
I think fantasy sports is a game of skill. It is no different than if you pay money to enter a bowling tournament or a fishing tournament or a golf tournament, which Floridians enjoy every weekend, to then use your skill to try and acquire prize money.
In Florida, millions of people already play fantasy sports, and Broder says he wants to make sure they're allowed to continue. He's picking up where Gaetz left off, filing a bill that would clarify playing fantasy sports is not gambling. Broder says it's time to make sure the state's position is clear since the only legal guidance currently available in Florida comes from a late 90s opinion from then Attorney General Bob Butterworth on what's called rotisserie gaming.
Which was before the internet, which is when you basically hung pockets on the back of a door and went around and put, you know, people's trading cards in each pocket to see who you drafted. That is all we have to go by. So as though that opinion has been floated around, and you've got some federal implications that always come in when people are trying to make their own case, it's necessary for once and for all for the legislature to make a determination as to what is legal and what is not. And so this bill very simply says fantasy sports is legal.
Broder's measure comes as lawmakers are wrestling with a number of gambling concerns, including the future of a gambling agreement with the Seminole Indian Tribe and a push by paramutuals to be allowed slot machines. Broder says last legislative session, a similar measure was drowned by additional gaming amendments. This session, his hope is to pass the measure as a single standalone bill. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, this week, just about everyone's familiar with the only two things that are certain are death and taxes, right? Well, this week's Capital Report didn't get into taxes very much, but we will close out this week's program with a story about death. After experiencing the death of his grandparents, a South Florida lawmaker wants to change how patients are treated at the end of life, and Kate Payne has that story.
Republican Senator Jeff Brandis of St. Pete is worried about how Floridians are dying, and for him, it's personal.
You know, having to see both my grandparents pass in the last few years and being in the room when these conversations took place, and they were incredibly emotional, and the urge to say, do everything, and no matter what that is sometimes so strong.
In the chaos of an emergency room or intensive care unit, patients may not be able to make their wishes known, whether that's for palliative or aggressive care.
If we we had had the conversation earlier, I think my grandparents would have made some different choices than maybe our family made at that time.
And the statistics bear out that most Americans aren't getting the kind of end-of-life care they want. Polling data shows between 70 and 80% of people want to die at home. But according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, only 25% of Americans actually do. Even for the estimated 20 to 30% of people who do have an advance directive detailing their wishes, it doesn't always happen. Marshall Kapp heads up a collaboration between the schools of medicine and law at Florida State University.
The problem is, in actual practice, when an emergency arises and the patient can't speak for himself anymore or herself anymore, that living will either isn't available or it just doesn't get followed, or it's in terms that are too general to be applied to the specific situation.
That's why Jeff Brandis wants terminally ill Floridians to start using a new kind of document called a POLST. That's a physician order for life-sustaining treatment.
And so it's really that opportunity to identify that conversation earlier and to work with the patients to make sure that we identify their goals for the end of life and that we're following their goals in a medical order format.
A POLST is basically an expansion of a do not resuscitate order that includes a range of interventions. It's a medically specific document that patients and doctors fill out together. And Brandis's bill would protect doctors from legal action when they carry out those orders. Marshall Kapp says that's the main obstacle.
Healthcare professionals, including doctors, live in a litigious environment. They're afraid of potential legal consequences, and they're just not likely to do POLST for patients or to honor POLST in the absence of explicit Florida legislation.
This isn't the first time Brandis has tried to get the bill passed. Last legislative session, some pro-life groups worried the orders could be abused. Diane Gowski represents the Florida Catholic Medical Association Guild.
Are you signing your life away? That is the real question people need to ask when they approach a POLST.
But Kapp says POLST orders should not be confused with physician-assisted death.
It's not a form of euthanasia. It's not a form of denying desired appropriate medical treatment for patients. It's a way for patients to have the kind of treatment that they want.
Other states are already using POLST, but a 2016 paper published in the Journal of the American Medical Association concludes it's still not clear whether it really does improve outcomes. Still, proponents argue any way to give patients more control in their final days is worth talking about. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Kate Payne, and Sarah Mueller. We also thank our contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPRCapReport, and please join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.